Welcome to Case in Point, produced by the University of Pennsylvania Carey Law School. My name is Claire Finkelstein, and I am the Algernon Biddle Professor of Law and Professor of Philosophy, as well as the founder and faculty director of the Center for Ethics and the Rule of Law, otherwise known as CERL, here at Penn Law. With me today is Richard Painter, the S. Walter Ritchie Professor of Corporate Law at the University of Minnesota and a member of the CERL Advisory Council. Thank you for joining us. We're here to discuss the report on the Department of Justice and the Rule of Law under the tenure of Bill Barr, a report produced by CERL in conjunction with CRU, namely Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Richard and I were the chairs of the committee that drafted this report, along with Noah Bookbinder, the executive director of CRU. The report was undertaken as part of the 2020 CERL summer internship. This summer conducted entirely remotely, Richard and I put together a committee of professionals to help us and the student interns produce this report. So the working group studied eight areas in which concerns have been raised about the conduct of Attorney General Barr or about the DOJ policy under which Mr. Barr was operating. And the eight areas were as follows. We looked at the rollout of the report of Special Counsel Mueller and Barr's involvement in presenting it and later redacting it. We looked at the possible involvement of the Department of Justice in the alleged Ukraine affair, a matter for which President Trump was impeached in the House of Representatives. We looked at the use of politicized counter-investigations and possible coordination of such investigations across the branches to undercut the origins of the Russia probe. We looked at the interference on the part of the Department of Justice in ongoing investigations and prosecutions for political purposes, including advising the president on the use of the pardon power. We looked at the use of emergency powers, including deployment of federal agents and federal troops against protesters in Portland, Lafayette Square, and elsewhere. We looked at the firing or reassignment of individuals whose mandate requires that they remain politically independent, such as inspectors general of the various federal agencies. We looked at the potential involvement of the Department of Justice in the politicization of the intelligence community. And finally, we looked at the overall politicization of the Department of Justice in a number of important departments, such as the Office of Legal Counsel or the Solicitor General's Office. The report was quite comprehensive and eventually reached a number of both general and specific conclusions, the primary conclusion of which was that we recommended that Mr. Barr should face careful inquiry in Congress, and in particular, that an impeachment inquiry would be warranted as an initial matter in the Judiciary Committee of the House of Representatives.
Richard, maybe you'd like to talk about what the single most concerning thing that we learned about in conducting this report, and what do you think really drove our conclusion that the House should be entering into an impeachment inquiry on Bill Barr?
Well, the conduct of the Attorney General, if we look at the big picture here, is centered around one theme, and that is using the Department of Justice in order to assure, to the extent possible, the re-election of Donald Trump as President of the United States for a second term. That's where all of these things come together. Whether it is Bill Barr ordering federal agents to clear Lafayette Park of protesters, peaceful protesters, so President Trump can walk across Lafayette Park for a campaign photo op holding a Bible upside down in front of St. John's Episcopal Church. Whether it is taking the Mueller report and misrepresenting it to Congress, and then withholding from Congress the redacted Mueller report and ignoring subpoenas, whether it is the handling of the Ukraine matter, or the Roger Stone and Michael Flynn prosecutions, the firing of the United States Attorney in the Southern District of New York, or in the middle of about half a dozen politically sensitive investigations in the Southern District of New York that would damage Donald Trump in the election. The list goes on and on of Bill Barr's conduct and misconduct of the Department of Justice, but the central theme is his desire to help President Trump win re-election. And along with that, the substantial pressure that has been put on Bill Barr and other cabinet members by Donald Trump to cross the line into using their official positions to promote his political campaign of itself, a serious violation of the Hatch Act, the criminal provisions of the Hatch Act by the President of the United States, as you and I have both explained in the Department of Justice in the criminal complaint we filed earlier this week against the president. But Bill Barr's conduct here is all about reelecting Donald Trump. And it's very, very concerning what's going on in the Department of Justice.
Richard, we've had several days of unrest in here in Philadelphia, just a couple of days before the election. And we've heard Donald Trump talk about possibly sending poll watchers, in quotes, to Philadelphia. We saw the dispatch of federal agents to Portland. It's one of the things that our report covered and expressed concerns about, as well as other cities around the country. Can you talk a little bit about the concerns that the report expressed and what we might be worried about going forward in terms of Bill Barr using the powers of the Department of Justice to send federal agents?
Well, yes, this is very concerning. And once again, the objective here is the use of the power of the Justice Department to try and reelect Donald Trump. And what they would like to see in the streets of Philadelphia, as in other cities over the summer, is as much civil unrest as possible so that voters throughout the state of Pennsylvania will be angry at the so-called urban mobs in Philadelphia, will stir up racial hatred and get people to get on their red hats and go out there and vote for Donald Trump. And the more trouble, the better, because then he can come in as a law and order candidate, which is what Richard Nixon did in 1968. But here we've got the Justice Department behind the president's campaign, helping implement the strategy. So are they going to send just poll watchers? Or are they going to send federal troops and officers the way they did to Portland, Oregon, the way they threatened to bring to Minnesota against the will of our governor? We made it clear that federal troops were not welcome in Minnesota to quell the unrest after the murder, the George Floyd murder over the summer last May. This is a serious concern. This is the way dictatorships began. When you have the federal government, against the will of the states, threatening to send in troops to go after people, to go after the opposition, under the mantra of trying to restore order. This happened in Germany in 1932, before Hitler seized power. The federal government, the chancellor of Germany, von Papen, and the president, Paul von Hindenburg, wanted to send troops into Prussia to quell civil unrest, riots between communists and fascists. Federal troops would only end up taking the side of the right-wing groups against the communists. And the government of Prussia said, we don't want you here. We can handle our own affairs, just like the governor of Pennsylvania and the mayor of Philadelphia now are saying to Donald Trump, we can take care of this ourselves. And The federal government there in Germany went all the way up to the German Supreme Court and got the Supreme Court of Germany to sign off on that and let him send those troops on in. And under the emergency powers under Article 48 of Weimar Constitution, and those are the same emergency powers that Adolf Hitler, when he was Chancellor of Germany, used only 6 months later to shut down the entire republic. So this is a very dangerous trend when you've got the President of the United States threatening to use executive power to send in federal officers to interfere in the affairs of the state of Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, or anywhere else. And he's trying to do this a week before an election. I'd say absolutely not. We're going to make sure he doesn't do that. And Bill Barr is going to do everything he can to help him do it.
Yeah, one of the questions that we talked about is the use of the Department of Justice to prosecute political enemies of the president, as well as the use of prosecutorial discretion to withhold punishment from friends of Donald Trump. And that's another theme to some extent that we see from history. Let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, we know the case of Roger Stone was an enormous concern, and the president granted clemency in a situation in which the evidence was extremely strong that Roger Stone had violated the law. We saw instances in which the Department of Justice was used to punish individuals, for example, Michael Cohen, who insisted on proceeding with the publication of his memoir, was literally put back into prison when he proceeded with that. Maybe you can just say a few words about how important you think that aspect of the report was.
Well, this is very important. This is how the Justice Ministry functions in a dictatorship. This is how the Justice Ministry functioned in Germany after Adolf Hitler seized control. This is how the Justice Ministry, the Department of Justice, is used in a country where the president has absolute authority. If you are opposed to Vladimir Putin in Russia, you either disappear or you're prosecuted, sent off to Siberia. And that's the way it works in a dictatorship in an authoritarian country. That's not the country we want to live in. And for the power, the prosecutorial power of the Justice Department to distinguish between political friend and enemy, to use that phrase from Carl Schmitt, the legal philosopher in Germany, became a member of the Nazi Party, to use the Justice Department in that way, to say, you are my friend, you get a pardon, you're my political enemy, you go to jail. That's the path to dictatorship.
Yeah, one of the things that someone might say to us is, so why did this group recommend initiating impeachment proceedings against Bill Barr so late in the game? I mean, if Biden wins the election, you know, there's going to be a different attorney general in there. What should we care? And so let's talk a little bit about accountability, because I think one of the overarching aims of the group was to try to set the tone for accountability with regard to the misuse of the Justice Department. One of the things that I've written a lot about is the use of law to distort the law, when law becomes a kind of fig leaf for its own destruction. And you find that in this case, under Bill Barr, the Justice Department has really used the veneer of adherence to law, but in a way that actually destroys the legal traditions and the accountability and the reliability of justice in our system. But maybe you want to say something a little bit, especially having been in the Bush White House as a chief ethics, White House ethics lawyer, about the notion of accountability, especially as we transition potentially from one administration to the next.
Well, yes, I'd be happy to. And in the Bush administration, I worked in financial conflicts of interest, did the best I could to prevent cabinet officials and senior White House officials from having financial conflicts of interest. I believe we did a pretty good job on that. But there were other parts of the Bush administration where the rule of law was distorted, in particular over at the Justice Department, the torture memos. You yourself have written extensively on this and the need to hold people accountable. And as you pointed out in 2010-11, when you were writing about this, the President Obama made the wrong call when they decided they weren't going to look back and hold people accountable, lawyers and others, for violations of the criminal statutes in the United States, prohibiting torture and our treaty obligations. And when you don't hold people accountable for their conduct, it happens again. And now we see John Yoo, the torture lawyer, you had urged that President Obama hold accountable back in 2010 and 11. That what is he doing? He's advising Donald Trump on the so-called unitary executive theory, the same theories that he used to justify torture, he's using to help Donald Trump. Donald Trump has John Yoo's book on his desk in the Oval Office. And so holding people accountable, we've got to do that. We can't just look forward. We need to look back. And those who violated our criminal statutes, whether it's obstruction of justice, torture, anything else, need to be held accountable. Very important to do that. Impeachment is one way. Prosecution is another. Impeachment proceedings can be opened against Bill Barr. Officers can be impeached after they leave office. It happened once in the 19th century. A secretary of the Navy, I believe, for President Grant was impeached and permanently barred from office. And that's one of the consequences of conviction by the Senate. Also, as you pointed out in op-ed, you wrote in the New York Times back in January, you know, if we have an open impeachment inquiry, we can enforce some subpoenas and we can get some information. We can start doing that now in November. Open impeachment inquiry right now, late October, carry it through November, regardless who wins this election, and subpoena this Justice Department and get these documents, including that unredacted Mueller report. And the Supreme Court is just this summer affirmed in the Mazars opinion that if you've got an open impeachment proceeding, you could probably subpoena at the House of Representatives quite a lot. But the House can't just ask for documents willy-nilly. They need to have a reason. And impeachment against Bill Barr would be a heck of a good reason.
That's one of the things that Congress really needs to watch out for at this point, especially with the composition of the Supreme Court having changed, which is it's going to be a lot harder for Congress to get its subpoenas enforced. When it acts on an impeachment inquiry, of course, Congress acts in the strongest possible way that it can and has the greatest leverage with regards to getting its subpoenas enforced. And so that was actually one reason for the recommendation, is that we think that it's really critical that the motivations of the Justice Department, the information that they had, and the chain of command that was being followed here, all of that really needs to be exposed so that we can start to look at how to protect the Justice Department from this kind of politicization in the future, and how to ensure that future attorneys general are really defending the rule of law and defending our institutions as they're supposed to.
You're absolutely right. And this time, we need an open impeachment inquiry with respect to Bill Barr, against Bill Barr, right away in the House, and leave it open until we enforce all those subpoenas, and not make the mistake that you pointed out back in January in New York Times op-ed. What they did with Trump is they waited to impeach him, then they quickly had impeachment inquiry, and then they just sent it over to the Senate and closed the impeachment inquiry. Once they closed the impeachment inquiry, they can't force any of the subpoenas. They can't get the information they need about what's going on. And of course, once you send it over to the Senate, Mitch McConnell just puts it in the waste paper basket. And that's just completely useless when it comes to a Senate trial. They didn't do anything over there. So keep it in the House, keep it open, enforce those subpoenas and find out what's happening in DOJ. And I think you'd find out that this DOJ is basically an arm of the Trump reelection campaign, nothing more.
Yeah, there's a final issue that we should mention here, Richard, which has to do with national security. What happened with the intelligence community and the damage that was done to the intelligence community in this administration, which Bill Barr has really been at the center of, poses a grave national security threat to our country. In particular, the use of counter investigations. Well, the Durham investigation and the Bash investigation did not produce for the Trump administration what they had been hoping for, but really setting up former intelligence officers to be investigated, to be subpoenaed in this way when the main thing that they did wrong was raise red flags about the ties between Donald Trump and Russia. That is, and the constant railing against the Hurricane Crossfire inquiry, that has all damaged the intelligence community enormously. So going into a new administration, it's going to be critical that we can trust the intelligence community, that they are free to operate as long as they operate within the bounds of the law, And that the public is able to hear what they have to say with regard to foreign powers trying to interfere with our election.
Well, you're absolutely right. And our report has a detailed section of the report discussing this problem, much of it written by George Croner, who is a member of our working group, who has extensive experience in the intelligence community, working with the intelligence community over many years. And George has written on this also on the online blog, Just Security, several articles. This is a grave concern because we have people who put their lives at risk in intelligence, who are working very hard to gather information on various operations being conducted against the United States, whether it's by Russia or any other adversary. And these loyal Americans who work in our intelligence community, often at very modest pay, expose themselves to enough danger already to have the United States Attorney General sending prosecutors into the intelligence community, treating our intelligence employees as if they're criminals or suspects or targets in investigation, asking them questions and threatening them under the false statement statute. And the list goes on and on. This is has a serious chilling effect on our intelligence community. It's like the dictators who go and shoot their best generals. And that's what we're doing to ourselves. And we're opening ourselves wide open, whether it's the Russians or the Chinese or wherever it is, wants to conduct espionage in the United States, computer hacking, the rest of it. We're not going to have any defense because Donald Trump and Bill Barr would have intimidated people in the intel community who just want to keep their head low and avoid getting in the crossfire. So this is a big, big concern. Our report discusses extensively. I'm very, very grateful for George Croner having contributed such a very in detailed analysis to our report on that.
And we should just say that George is also a member of the CERL Advisory Council. We're grateful to everyone on the committee who helped us with this report, to Crew for having engaged with us on this, and Noah Bookbinder, its executive director, as our co-chair, and most importantly, to the extraordinary student CERL summer interns who did an enormous amount of research in a very condensed period of time, combing through public records, helping us to conduct interviews, reaching out to individuals who might have something to add to our inquiry. And we hope that they had a wonderful experience as well in doing this deep dive into our critically important Department of Justice.